Well, joining us for a regular chat, and that is Mr. Ken Bates. Morning, KB.
Good morning.
How are you?
I've got a bit of a short throat, but I'm sure we'll get through that.
Yes, exactly. Let's start up with Leeds United then, first of all, KB. And, well, it's today that this Leeds Fans LLP are launching their plan to buy shares in the club, hoping to raise between £5 and £10 million. And I think in their hope is to oust GFH.
Yes. The problem is, of course, that I don't know that will make much difference because, as I revealed a couple of weeks ago on this programme, GFH shares, they hold 25% of Leeds City Holdings Limited. And Leeds City Holdings, after the dilution by Massimo Cellino last June, which was kept quiet for some unknown reason, Leeds City Holdings now only own 11% of the football club. And since GFH have allegedly got 25% Leeds City Holdings, in effect, they've only got 2.75%, 2.75% of the football club. And, of course, the reason they've kept it quiet, because they've been overvaluing their shares, their Leeds United club shares in their own balance sheet, prop up their balance sheet, which is a bit of a disaster. So I'm not sure they can afford to sell, if you know what I mean, because then they would have to reveal the true loss that they've made on their shares, which has been hidden so far with clever accounting. Anyway, it's further complicated. What may help them a bit is about David Hayes' latest exploits, which I'll come on to later, another matter. I wish them well, but as we all know, there's a big difference between saying you'll do something and actually doing it. I have spoken to Mr. Thwaites because I thought he had an idea. I had a great idea of buying the 25% that I thought GFH still had. Until, of course, he came out in court. And Mark Taylor doing his winding up order on the club. But Massimo put, I think it's £8 million directly into Leeds United in form of new shares, which had diluted GFH down to, as I say, 25% of 11%. So we're looking at 2.75% of the club. But I wish them well. Might be a bit complicated by the fact that Mr. Umber's a stated categorically that Massimo's not going to sell, and all his family. But on the other hand, in the time I was at Leeds and before me, so many people came along professing to do this, professing to do that, and they hadn't got two bubs to rub together and couldn't demonstrate their ability to write out cheques. So before Leeds Fans LLP are taken seriously, the money will have to be in the bank, not the promises of it. So if Leeds fans really want a stake in their club, or which they profess to be their club, there's now deeds and not words. But I wish them well.
We'll keep you up to date of exactly how that's going on here on Radio Yorkshire. You've just alluded to a little bit of news on David Hague, currently still in the Dubai chair. What was the latest, KB?
Well, the biggest thing is the 9th of April, next week. That's when the court hearing is being heard at the Magistrates Court in Westminster, Magistrates Court, when he's trying to get an arrest warrant against Hisham Al-Rayyad and Jinesh Patel. They're both directors of Leeds United, but why, I don't know. Other than that, I think it's another way of propping up their balance sheet. But they could call it a strategic investor. Anyway, he's now taken further action against Peter Gray, the Dubai-based partner of Gibson, Dunn and Crusher. He used to act for Leeds United when David Haye was a director. Charging him with engaging in human trafficking to lure him to Dubai, where he's now in prison and is on his 11th month of imprisonment. Still hasn't been charged. Still hasn't been interviewed. It's an absolute disgrace. And what are the British government doing about it? Nothing. Out of sight, out of mind. But the whole thing is, it should open a can of worms on the 9th, when everything will be out in the open, public forum, hopefully great coverage by the media to alert people to his dilemma, his incarceration, absolute disgrace, and hopefully it'll blow the lid off everything. Now, the interesting thing is, if these two guys don't turn up to court or not represented in some way, then it could be that Haig will get his case awarded to him anyway. Then he said he's going to go for an international arrest warrant to get extradited. I don't know, they're holed up in Bahrain, hiding away. But the moment they step outside Bahrain, Interpol can have them arrested and extradited back to England. That should be fun. But it won't do JFH's credibility any good. That's assuming, of course, they've got any left. But David Haye's got some serious people acting for him now. And they're so incensed. They've got international lawyers and an international, he's a human rights barrister. And this fellow, Gray, has already admitted in another matter that he committed perjury. And he's an officer of the British High Court. So he has, well, I think, been reported to the Law Society with a view to disciplinary action against him. Of course, that'll be held pending until these other court cases are resolved. But I think the lid's being lifted now, and GFH's attempt, Patel and Hisham attempt to silence Haig, will fail then, because it'll all come out in the wash. So, what's this case? And meanwhile, we don't do any business in Dubai, because how do you know you're going to get a fair treatment? Look, Jersey's nearly as bad, not quite. They don't do business in Jersey, and don't do business in Dubai. And certainly think twice before you consider buying one of their holiday homes.
Talking of business, KB, and just something that came up about while you were chairman of Leeds United, the sale of Fabian Delph, and there was an article, because of course Fabian Delph has been quite on in the England team, certainly over the last couple of matches, and just some quotes that have come out about him saying, at the time that he was sold by Leeds United, I didn't want to leave, I love the club, I'm a Leeds fan, but it was the best for both of us that I moved on for the club and for me, for my development. What was the situation when Fabian Delph left?
Well, the situation, he's a lovely fellow, and he's kind enough to make the positive remarks. What actually happened was, we wanted him to sign a new contract. We didn't want to sell him, we wanted to keep him. Because he and Howson, etc., we saw the backbone of our hopeful promotion-winning team. But his agent, I mean, there are so many lousy agents in football today. But Fabian's agent was a fantastic fellow. And he came in to see Sean. And I think I was there at the same time. And he simply explained that Delph didn't want to leave the club. He was very happy at Leeds United. He loved it. But he wanted to play Premiership football. since I think he was getting the situation where he clearly wasn't going to get promotion that season. He wanted to move for his career, which I quite understood. There's no point in keeping him against his will. But more importantly, if you stifle some youngster's career, then that sends out a very bad message to other youngsters who are considering joining Leeds. So we did the best of a bad job. We asked him which club he'd like to go to. Manchester City were interested at one time, but they'd just stolen two of our young players. So he didn't feel very inclined towards them. And eventually, we agreed a deal with Aston Villa, with Fab's approval, and his agent, obviously. And we agreed terms with Villa, and the chief executive flew out to Spain, where Lerner was at the time, to agree the figures, and they were signed off overnight. I've been watching his career ever since. Had a bit of an injury at one time, which dogged him. Now he's come back. He's got into the first team, playing well. In a not a very good Aston Villa team at the moment, let's face it. And be picked for England and do well when he joined it. I'm delighted for the young man. And may he play for England for many years to come. But that's also why we've now got to hang, Leeds United, we've got to hang on to the youngsters we have in the first team now. And that's why I think it's important that Massimo Cellino resolves the question of the future management. I hope they give it to Neil Redfern. I think he's earned it on a permanent basis. And then they sign the five youngsters on nice long-term contracts, proper salaries, which is all the base, you know, the backbone of Leeds United's soon, I hope, promotion team.
Well, let's move on, KB, to some really, really wonderful news about the young lad Leo Stott, who had some problems, of course, walking before a very kind donation by yourself to fund the surgery. And now he's able to walk and his future's looking exceptionally bright.
I mean, we spoke to his mother, Carol Oldham, and Leo's doing very well. He now started walking, getting stronger every week. He stopped using his frame. You remember they had a sort of Zimmer frame on wheels for him to walk. And he stopped using that now. The doctor says only a matter of time. He's walking fully as his legs continue to strengthen. And I think we've got to go over to Oldham and do an interview with Carol and Leo in the next couple of weeks. Now that Sam's back off his holidays. And once Leo's got his next block of hospital appointment booked in. It's marvellous news. And don't forget, this is the National Health Service that couldn't see its way to funding him. But if you want bigger boobs or smaller boobs or a gastric band to stop you eating, no problem. Sign here. Which is a disgrace. And the joke about it is, of course, that the money was put up to help him get his operation was done at Leeds General Infirmary. We had a marvellous team of surgeons. It took seven surgeons to do the various bits and bats on the nearly old day operation. But it's fantastic that he's now walking when he couldn't before. So that's some good news.
Certainly is some good news. And I think we need good news at the moment because the election's just about underway. We're only about just a little over a month before we go to the polls, and the campaign started in earnest. And tonight, of course, we're looking forward to a two-hour leadership debate on ITV. What are your thoughts on this election ahead of it all kicking off, KB?
Well, I fear the debate because I watch on a regular basis Prime Minister Question Time in the House of Commons, and frankly, it's a disgrace. I mean, balls and millibands, and to a lesser extent, Cameron, it's just personal abuse, absolute personal abuse. I've never seen such a low quality of it's not a debate, just a slangy match. And they're all as bad as each other. I mean, let's take one silly example. Miliband saying, oh, if we win the election, I'm going to immediately bring in 8,000 nurses and 1,000 doctors. Where are you going to get? Go to Morrison's supermarket and buy them? It takes 5 years to train a doctor. So even if Miliband wins the election on May the 7th, it'd be another election coming up before his first doctor steps into the room. The other alternative, of course, is to get them from abroad. But as we know, read the newspapers today. The fact of the matter is, half these doctors and nurses come abroad can't speak English. But what's more importantly, we're spending, 0.7% of our gross product on overseas aid. At the same time, we're stripping the qualified people from those backward nations to bring them into the UK and leaving those backward nations even more backward without qualified staff. It's not just that, it's plumbers and everything else, all skilled workers. So it doesn't make sense to us, I'll do this, I'll do that, but the devil's in the detail. I mean, most of these guys never done a day's work in their life in the real world, to forget media, marketing and PR, which of course isn't the real world anyway. The logistics of actually starting a business, running a business, and knowing, having the experience to tackle all the problems and setbacks that you meet on the way. Another thing, what is Miliband saying? He's going to, how many hundreds of thousands of apprenticeships? Well, no government, Labour or Tory, is going to create these apprenticeships. What has to be done is industry and companies have to create these jobs. And to do that, the industries and the companies and the CVG have to be persuaded it's worth doing. And to do that, it has to be a positive business climate with the politicians helping and encouraging business. But whenever you listen, particularly the Labour lot, I know it's, I say they're being one side, well, not really, because I'll come to the other in a minute. Labour lot, they're abusing business all the time. We're going to tax this, we're going to restrict that, we're going to stop that, we're going to do the other. Well, they've never, no business, no politician's ever created a job in his life, other than civil servants, which there are too many, overpaid, and in many cases underworked. So it's not very encouraging, all these wild promises. So why should people, if people have got a successful business, or they've sold it out, why should they start again? Why not just sit on their money and enjoy it instead of working to make Britain greater again? Fortunately, the businesses of this country are being successful. Their bosses are working hard for their shareholders who put the money up and take the risks. But they're doing it in spite of the politicians, not because of them. And if you look at Cameron, well, I'm not being funny, I want to see my Prime Minister in a suit and tie looking smart. I don't want to see him chopping cabbages or lettuces up in his kitchen. All this lovey-dovey, matey, blokey in the streety stuff. I always said what destroyed William... I always admired William Hague. I thought he was a man for the future. And he was advised by Seb Coe, who I knew because Seb Coe was a Chelsea supporter. And I think Coe's advice to Hague was appalling. I went off Hague, as many people did, on that day when he was pictured walking at the Notting Hill Carnival wearing a T-shirt and a baseball cap back to front. And this is England, not America. We want our leaders to look dignified and professional. Not making a cup of tea or something. We know it's all a parade anyway. PR people advise all the politicians should be shot. They sharpen all their bad points to a polish like diamonds. No, it's a most serious and important election for many, many years. And I fear the outcome. You've got that Scottish woman, the SNP, saying that she wants to destroy the union, destroy the country anyway. Meanwhile, she's going to blackmail at Westminster, get loads more money for the Scots. Well, why? Let them get on with it. But the interesting thing, if Scotland do go independent, they think they've got all the oil. Apart from that, the oil prices collapsed anyway. What they seem to forget is the Shetland Isles and the Orkney Islanders don't regard them as Scottish, themselves as Scottish. In fact, they have said in the recent 2 or 3 months, Oslo in Norway is nearer to the Shetlands and the Orkneys than Glasgow or Edinburgh. And if Scotland want independence from the Great Britain, the Shetlands and the Orkneys might want independence from Scotland. So they're all boasting and bullying and claiming and shouting and bawling. None of them done their maths properly. Meanwhile, of course, we've got the Yorkshire First Party. I was quite impressed when he was interviewed on TV the other night, the leader of that party, who's nobody escapes me for the moment, but he's quite right. Yorkshire's bigger than Scotland. It's more prosperous than Scotland without the oil, which is declining anyway. So instead of faceless civil servants in Bexhill or Redhill or elsewhere deciding what happens in Yorkshire, why doesn't Yorkshire First have much greater autonomy? Because if you don't like what's taking place in Leeds Town Hall, well, you can nobble Wakefield then in his pub and show him face to face, talk to the people and see the people make the decisions. But I think it's quite concerning because it doesn't look as any party will get. I mean, I'd rather have a Labour government than a hung parliament, because it just drifts for 5 years, particularly since those idiots, Cameron and Clegg, passed the law that says parliament now has to phone for 5 years and you can't break it up earlier. We've already seen what's happened in this parliament. We've done nothing for 6 months. It's just like being in a coma, waiting for May the 7th. So, think hard. To all the youngsters who can vote now for the first time, vote. It's your country and your future. Don't complain about things if you're not prepared to take a part in making a decision. And I have to tell you, me living in Monaco, I've deliberately not registered to vote, because I don't think it's right that people who are not living in the country can vote, unless they're soldiers, sailors, women in the forces, overseas, for the good of the country. So I urge everybody, get involved, make a decision, ask questions, and ask specific questions. Paxman had a great opportunity when he interviewed Miliband and Cameron, and he blew it by just being rude and not sticking to the point. It's going to be we're going to be bored over the next 5 weeks, I fear. But it is very important. And whatever your views, I urge everybody, get out and vote. Because it's your country, it's your future.
Quite right too, KB. And also, I urge everybody to enter the competition we've got running at the moment to win tickets to the Monaco Grand Prix, which I've never been, but I would imagine it's going to be one hell of a weekend.
Well, it's not just a weekend, it's a week. But the tickets that we're offering are for the semi-final and the final, and they're right on the finishing line. And if you look, turn around and look over the back, you can see the starting line as well. So tremendous tickets. seats in tremendous positions and a great time. I mean, the world and his wife come to Monte Carlo because it's one long party, day and night. And I don't go there myself. It's a great Irish pub. There's a great English pub called Flashman's. But there's pubs and bars everywhere. And it's good fun. And it's good-humoured. The police are helpful and supportive. And it's a great atmosphere. So well worth competing for. And, of course, our usual VIP tickets. And, by the way, we're hoping Leo Stott will come and his mum will come to one of our home games, be our guests in the executive box before the end of the season. So we've got that competition as well. And one last thing I've been asked to mention, just going down and picking up. Here we are. The Brendan Ormsby benefit game is on Sunday the 19th of April, kick-off 1 o'clock at the Farsley Grounds. And it's the Leeds Legends 11 versus John Sheridan's 11. And there'll be Gary McAllister, Gary Kelly, Neil Martin, Johnny Stiles, Simon Grayson, Lynn Snoddin, Redfern, Newsom, Aspin, McLennan, and many more. And Sheridan's team will have Chris Waddle, Carl Palmer, David Hurst, Des Walker, Paul Jewell, Peter Beagery, Nather Worthington, plus many ex-Villa and other players. The special guest will be the champion boxer, Justin Warrington. All tickets are £5 each. So Brendan was a good servant for Leeds United. And what they're doing is the money going to the Stroke Association. Speak Ability Care. So it's worthwhile going along, seeing all the current and past giants of Ellen Road, have a ball, and raise some money for a good cause. There you are. That's today's advert.
You don't fancy pulling on the boots yourself, KB, making an appearance?
Well, that'd be the day. It would have been the day. I'd probably fouled half of them and put them out of the game. But those days are long gone. I'd prefer to watch it with a glass of white champagne in my hand.
You can find all the details to the VIP competition and the Monaco Grand Prix. Go to our website, radioyorkshire.co.uk, and all the terms and conditions are on there as well. KB, thank you very much for joining us on Radio Yorkshire once again.
Thank you, and to wish everybody have a very happy Easter, hopefully. Well, mind, that's down to the boys. A few more wins, climb up the table, and put us all in a good mood by the time the comes around to renew your season tickets. So once again, have a happy Easter. Don't forget what I said about the election. It's your country. And therefore, if you don't take part in it, don't complain if you don't get not what you get.